bullying in the workplace, baby boomer nurses moving on, blood pressure and your marriage, plus a look at beta blockers. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Good day and welcome to The Nursing Show, episode 16. That's right, sweet 16 here at The Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. If you've been listening to The Nursing Show for some time, I want to thank you for coming back and checking out the show again. And for those of you that are brand new listeners, check out the rest of The Nursing Show episodes. You can find them archived over at nursingshow.com. And you can also subscribe over there. So if you haven't subscribed yet and you're listening via a web link or some other method, you might want to try subscribing to the show. You get it delivered to you absolutely free over at the Nursing Show site. There's several different methods you can use to subscribe, so check that out. Plus, there are other articles and news items that I find throughout the week, all posted with some commentary over at nursingshow.com. If you want to add some commentary of your own, you are more than welcome to do so. You can leave comments on the website directly on the blog posts there if you want to comment on a specific article. You can also comment, send me your email comments by email at comments@nursingshow.com. Either way, I welcome all of your comments, criticisms, suggestions, and corrections here, and I want to make sure that this show is a community effort and that the information presented here is of the best quality possible. I'll lead off the news today with a story I found over at medicalnewstoday.com, and they report from an article in the Journal of Obstetric, Gynecologic, and Neonatal Nursing. This is the most recent issue, March-April 2008 issue they're referring to. And it has to do with an alarming study conducted by the Joint Commission that looked at nurses and bullying in the workplace. And it found that, of course, when nurses are bullied in the workplace, it leads to a problem with good patient care, not surprisingly. Now, what they found in this article was that 50% of the nurses reported that they had been abused at work by bullies, and over 90% said they had witnessed such abusive behavior if they hadn't exactly experienced it themselves. This led to problems with their health, including PTSD, anxiety, depression, and insomnia. And it really points to how important it is for managers, supervisors, and other leaders in the nursing community to be very aware of situations that lead to employee dissatisfaction. While this doesn't seem to be necessarily an easy issue to fix, it can be a simple issue to fix. And the difference between simple and easy, I'll let you figure out. But simple meaning that it really means that there needs to be immediate follow-up by the person involved. They need to report this to their supervisors, and they need to stand up to the person that's trying to so-called put them in their place. This is not appropriate conduct in today's advanced workplace and the team environment that is necessary for good patient care. So this is something that needs to be addressed. Find out how your facility addresses this particular issue. Perhaps there needs to be a change, or perhaps there needs to be some education involved in your facility. So I urge you to check out the article and the study yourself, and maybe bring it to the attention of your educators in your community and facility and see if there can't be something done about this. As I move on into the second story today, I am interested in looking at how these type of problems affect our nurse staffing. Are people going to be staying in these jobs? Are people restricted from moving on from these types of situations? This is going to be compounded, of course, by the study I found that looks at a survey of baby boomer nurses and their plans over the next 3 years. And this was conducted by a healthcare staffing firm, one of the largest in the country, and they surveyed about 1,800 nurses between the ages of 45 and 60 and found that 35% of them were planning a major career change sometime during the next 3 years. In fact, they either plan to retire, move into a non-nursing job, shift to a part-time environment, or maybe shift to travel nursing. And this is going to put an additional burden on our local facilities as more and more jobs open and more of the nurses who remain are added to additional shifts to try to pick up the workload. This is going to continue. And so I urge you to check out the study, but there are a lot of job frustrations. And one of the things that these older nurses were looking at was a look at nurse staffing shortages. 80% of the nurses identified nurse staffing and shortages thereof as one of their top frustrations in the profession. So this is important to keep in mind and understand and follow as we continue to deal with nurse staffing issues in our own facilities and workplace. Finally, I will wrap up the news today with a look at an interesting blood pressure study that was brought out in the recent Annals of Behavioral Medicine. Now, blood pressure studies in the past have looked at a relationship between better blood pressure values among married people versus single people. But what this particular study found was that marital satisfaction also had an effect on blood pressure. In fact, the happier your marriage, the happier your blood pressure. And that's not surprising. Increased stress anywhere in our lives is likely to relate to an increased blood pressure. Interestingly enough, you could take this to the next step. The next time you're interviewing a patient or educating a patient about their blood pressure and you want to provide some additional resources for them, you might want to consider recommending that they get in touch with some kind of a marital counseling service if they seem to be having problems. Don't be afraid to ask that question and find out exactly how they're doing at home. This will have to be handled carefully, of course, but if you find out that this patient is doing well with their diet and their medication control, perhaps an additional method to reduce their blood pressure is to provide them other resources to reduce that blood pressure. And interestingly enough, getting some help with a problem in their marriage, looking at communication issues, and encouraging them to talk things out with their spouses may be an additional way to help them lower their blood pressure over time. I look forward to further studies into this issue. There is a relatively small sample size, just around 300 people involved in this study, but I think it is an interesting avenue and yet another way that people can adjust risk factors in their lives to help out with cardiovascular issues. And stress is one of those things that if we can successfully reduce the amount of stress in our lives, we can go a long way towards helping us live longer, happier, and healthier lives. Because of that article on blood pressure, I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to review some of the antihypertensive medications. I don't have a lot of time here, so I'm going to pick one class of antihypertensives, the beta blockers, because I think that's just a very commonly prescribed medication. At least I see it quite frequently in the field. Beta blockers work by blocking the beta response of the sympathetic nervous system, hence the name beta blocker, right? Let's do a quick review. Beta response of the sympathetic nervous system is the part of the sympathetic nervous system that deals with beta 1 effects, which are the myocardial, the primary cardiac effects, and that includes an effect on increased heart rate, increased contractility, and increased automaticity of the cardiac muscle. And then the beta 2 effects are effects on the lungs and the peripheral vasculature. So beta blockers can either be selective or non-selective in their action. And it's important to understand which beta blockers you're looking at when you deal with patients. Selective beta blockers like atenolol and metoprolol, are beta blockers that focus most of their action on the beta 1 effects, the cardiac effects only. It's important to understand, I say most of, because I think all beta blockers are going to have a broader spectrum effect, at least partially. So you need to be aware that there may be other effects into the beta 2 range, but the selective ones are more focused on the beta 1 effects. You have your non-selective beta blockers, which are going to affect all of the beta response, although they may be somewhat more selective in certain areas. And this would include medications like labetalol. Beta blockers are not often used in a vacuum, and by that I mean they're often paired with other medications, in some cases diuretics to decrease the fluid in the vasculature and thereby work in concert to decrease blood pressure, and they may also be prescribed with something like a calcium channel blocker or an ACE inhibitor to further increase the effects of the decrease in blood pressure. And so as these medications are dialed in, especially initially in the patient's care, there needs to be a lot of monitoring and follow-up with these patients to make sure that everything is being dealt with appropriately. They may need to have medication doses increased or decreased as necessary in order to provide the best therapeutic effect. In a facility, of course, blood pressures and vital signs will be monitored carefully whenever administering a medication like this. And you also want to monitor their INOs. You want to make sure that they're producing and getting rid of their fluids effectively via their kidneys. And you may want to monitor some of their lab values like their BUN as well as their potassium levels because of the concurrent use of the diuretic that may be accompanying this particular medication. If you're administering this medication in a facility, you want to make sure you're double-checking your orders. You want to make sure that the dosing is correct. And especially if you're administering one of these beta blockers via the IV route, you really want to stay on top of monitoring all blood pressure changes and be ready to implement a fluid bolus or another appropriate intervention to make sure that you keep the blood pressure stable. Generally, if the heart rate is already at the low end of normal or just below that, say below 60, 55, I've seen different numbers used by different physicians when prescribing this, you want to withhold the medication as well as blood pressures below a certain indicated level. And you would again refer to the guidelines for that particular medication or the specific orders. In addition to hypotension, other side effects may include fatigue, drowsiness, general weakness. Some patients experience some anxiety as well. One of the most alarming side effects for some patients is impotence and decreased libido associated with taking this medication. And this may be the reason that many people don't follow their dosing guidelines at home. So this is important to follow up on these with patients. Some medications have less of an effect in this area than others, or these patients may be better moved to other antihypertensive medications. So following up on patients and educating about side effects is very important. Lung sounds should be monitored when in a facility and during checkups to make sure there's no onset of CHF, pulmonary edema, and this can happen rather rapidly, especially in elderly patients who may miss a dose and double up or forget that they took a dose and take two doses. They may cause themselves to have a rapid onset of pulmonary edema at home and have to be seen rapidly. Of course, you would have these patients transported to the emergency department, or if you're seeing them in the emergency department, this may be a reason for their visit. Beta blockers have negative interactions with other antihypertensive medications, of course, and can have an increase in bradycardia and hypotension when taken concurrently. Also, you can have an issue when taking this medication with some over-the-counter cough solutions containing pseudoephedrine or other similar medications, as these may cause a runaway alpha adrenergic effect when the beta blocker is not there and acting counter to it on the vasculature. You can have actually an increased hypertension related to the taking of some of these other medications, along with illicit drug use. Use of medications like amphetamines, methamphetamines, or cocaine can also cause a runaway alpha adrenergic effect. Patients who were on oral anti-diabetic medications or hypoglycemic medications may experience increased glucose levels. And so these medications may need to have their doses adjusted up or down depending on their specific area of effect. So again, these are other medications that need to be monitored in relation to patients taking beta blockers. In the home environment, or as patients are sent home, you want to make sure you educate patients and their family members on how to take blood pressures and that they should be taking their blood pressure regularly, once a day or so, and monitoring that information and making sure that they know when and whom to contact should they have a blood pressure that is lower than expected. You'll also want to educate patients about watching out for signs of beta blocker overdose, sudden onset of respiratory distress, perhaps wheezing, blurred or double vision, onset of an irregular heartbeat. Spouses may notice patients are confused or drowsy, unusually drowsy, or suffering from fatigue. All of these things can be signs of onset of shock and beta blocker overdose. That's going to wrap up another episode here of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show again this week. There are links to everything I've talked about in the show notes. And as always, I remind you that it's incumbent upon you to make sure you're checking out the most current and regular information. There's only so much I can do here. It's your job to follow up and make sure that you have the best information in your application using your resources. If you'd like to add to the discussion here or have a comment or correction you'd like to send in, make sure you comment on that by contacting me here by email at comments@nursingshow.com. Head on over to nursingshow.com as well and check out all of the links for everything else and articles that I post during the week. I will close out the show as I always do with some great PodSafe music from the band Slackstring and their song Wednesday Morning. Kind of a great lift me up kind of song. This is one of those tunes that I like to listen to and kind of bring my mood back in line. You can check out the band's link in the show notes and let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. Until next time, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want to remind all of you to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Wednesday morning looked real fine. Took a glance at my wristwatch, 8 a.m. I read the time. I left my little girl sitting pretty in the bed. Stretched my arms, I touched the sky. Time to clear my weary head. Wednesday morning, take my blues away. Wednesday morning, it's gonna be a brighter day. Come so many times before, I used to frown upon my life, but I'm not going to anymore. I waved to Mrs. Johnson, I saw a schoolboy skipping by. Took a domer to my head, what a feeling, what a high. Clapped my hands, kicked up my feet, danced around the yard so sweet. I listened to the birdies sing, the music was a treat. Wednesday morning, it's gonna be a brighter day. Wednesday morning.
opened up the paper, I saw the big bold words in print. Brain so big, I'm so Chinese.